Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million...
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world, and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million,
well, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. Tom Howe here, Andrew on the board, back on the job today. Well, Ricky was pretty sick yesterday, and he's about as reliable as they get. And he texts me at 1:40. I'll try and make it. And 1:40 or 4:40, I talked to him, and I go, don't even think about it. So there you go. So we have. Kevin, I think we might have Carl. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 27. Kind of an odd Wednesday with the labor report coming out today, the CPI coming out Friday. So we have odd stuff. Speaking of odd stuff, do we have Kevin and Carl?
Yeah. You got us both, and I'm dealing with a pretty sore throat, so I'm figuring Carl can do a lot of talking today.
Well, oh, no, not that. Well, I'm not, so there you go.
Well, funny you should mention that, Kevin, because not that anybody wants to hear our issues, but I had the cold everybody else had for like 10 days, and I kind of spun my way through it, and I was okay in 3-4 days. All of a sudden, it kind of starts coming back. And I'm thinking, yesterday, I was in real bad shape. Man, we're done the show, but I finally call my doctor, and she goes, you know, you better go get a Z-Pak. That doesn't sound viral. And cause this day and age, you always assume something's a virus. Nobody wants to take antibiotic if you don't have to, right? It's all been driven into us. But I don't know what would have happened if there was such not a thing as antibiotics. I only got a Z-Pak, took a couple of them, and 5 hours later, I feel a lot better. So whatever it was or whatever it is definitely bacterial, not viral. I don't know, what would that be, Carl? Would it be a bronchitis thing or what?
So usually what ends up happening, it's not always true, but usually it's what's true. So there's, you know, there's bacteria and molds around your, which, you know, is a fungus, that are around you all the time. And you cannot avoid coming in contact with them. They're all over the environment. But
they make you strong most of the time, right?
Well, bacteria are binary multipliers, okay? So 1 becomes 2, becomes 4, becomes 8. Whereas viruses are exponential multipliers. So 1 becomes 1,000 or 10,000, all right? And the reason that normally bacteria do not cause all that much trouble is precisely that, because your body figures out what's going on and whacks them before they can get large enough. The other thing that happens with bacteria is that the bacteria themselves are not usually the actual cause of illness. So, and in fact, you crap out a trillion of them a day. Because without them, you couldn't digest food. So they're kind of important that you not kill all of them. When your immune system gets busy with other things, aka fighting a virus or whatever have you, they can colonize and cause problems. And the reason that you have the issue is it's actually the toxins that the bacteria produce that make you sick. So that's why when you get a tetanus shot, it's actually tetanus toxin. It's not like a weakened form of tetanus. It's the toxin that the bacteria produces that they give you. And but it's the toxins that cause the problem, okay, that make you ill and ultimately can do very bad things. So yeah, but we have this, there is this insane load of BS that runs around, that it is the screaming Karens of the world with their sick children that have caused antibiotic resistance. And therefore, you must not give someone who presents with any kind of respiratory infection antibiotics until you have ruled out the possibility that it's viral, which you can only do through time, because there's thousands of virus strains.
Or if you have a patient like me who's half dead and says it's got to be something else.
Well, yeah, or you yell loud enough, right? So, but the reality is that has nothing to do with antibiotic resistance in the context of where people are, you know, unhappy about it happening. Yes, it happens. It's inevitable when you use antibiotics against infections. And it's absolutely inevitable. If you think about it, Chief, it makes what the doctors try to tell you, what the so-called public health people try to tell you, makes absolutely no sense. If you take an antibiotic and you do not have a bacterial infection, you don't have one at all. There are none of them that are of concern in your body. And you take it, there's nothing to become resistant to it.
Right, I agree.
You haven't treated the bacteria with something, and therefore it can't learn what it is because it's not exposed to it. Okay? If it's there and you use it and you knock it down, if any of them survive that assault, then yeah, they could become resistant to it because that particular that individual bacteria survives, it then multiplies, and it survived the assault of the antibiotic. Okay, so yeah, it is inherent. Antibiotic resistance is inherent in the use of antibiotics. It doesn't matter whether you like this or not, it's a fact. And yet, this has led to this insane nonsense where, you know, dogma is thou shalt not until somebody screams and says, well, that can't possibly be virus. Well, that's crap. Okay, it's just absolute crap. And by the way, this killed a whole bunch of people during the crazy, because an awful lot of people that actually had ultimately went into respiratory failure, yeah, they had COVID, but they also had a secondary bacterial infection, which the doctors would not treat.
Right. Oh, I remember that, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, this is, by the way, this is why a budesonide inhaler worked. Okay, because that's an inhaled steroid, but it's not much of it gets into your body on a systemic basis. Almost all of it is in the lungs, and it does absolutely nothing for viruses. But it used to be used for asthma very commonly. The patent ran out. The companies don't like that because that makes it $5, and so they changed it. So it's very rarely used for asthma as a maintenance medication today, but it absolutely worked, and this was known early on in South America because there was a place down there that used it, and basically nobody died. There was a doctor in Texas that used it. Basically nobody died. Of course nobody gave it to anybody on a widespread basis, because no, you can't, no, yeah, okay.
We'll take your license if you do.
Well, definitely, and
guess who, guess who had a inhaler of it that I sourced from, a country that shall not be named, when I got it and things were deteriorating, I used it and it instantly stopped and reversed the problem. Within 12 hours.
Well, so, but
Chief, this dogma persists to this day, okay? And it's crap.
By the way, I got new jobs for you guys. If you want to make a bunch of dough.
Oh no, yeah. Not that.
The world's rich are relocating at a pace unseen in history. Where are they going? Well, it says here that they're
going to Florida out of California.
Well, they're zeroing in on some place in Michigan, this little lake, and they're trying to kick all the guys who live there out. This guy O'Neill is causing some problems, but they'll be rid of him in a minute, they say.
Well, you know, if you're going to Michigan to avoid some of these problems, you really are rather stupid.
It's only this little lake Kevin's at. Anyway, you rid of him. Anyway,
well, not only that, but you really are rather stupid, because Michigan has, Michigan is not exactly a friendly place from a tax structure perspective.
But there always has to be a consultant.
Why not? Definitely not.
So, Kevin, you got to reveal. You got to rechange. You're on your like fourth career. You need a fifth. You got to be a. You got
to. Yeah, it's called Welcome to Walmart.
You got to be an consultant, or consultant. Demand for cross-quarter relocation consulting, residency planning, and citizen consultancy services are on the rise. Who would have thunk when you're sitting there in college, mind your own business, looking at your potential jobs, that you would be a citizen consultant? What the hell?
There's so much of this crap. By the way, the jobs report, of course, is
coming out
today.
Well, let's not want to talk about that thing I sent you guys. I don't know if you read it or not, but.
Well, yeah, all right. So, yeah, I read it.
Well, you're the one who's been. See, it's Kevin, how hard is it to agree with guys on the show? The reason why I plucked it out is I'm saying this is exactly what Carl's been talking about. Now he doesn't want to talk about it.
Oh, no. I'm happy to talk about it. I just...
It has to do with the adjustment.
Right. And here's the thing. So there's... By the way, Zero has been screaming about this overnight, too.
Let me just talk about where... The jobs number, everybody's talking about 50,000. So that's... And with the unemployment rate unchanged. So if that happens, I don't think there's much of a world, right? But it says here they're talking about this somehow or another. Every one of the jobs number has come out, and of course, this was one of the campaign things for Trump. But now it's happening with him either, as well. Whatever the number is, they produce the next month, they revise it down. And again, this is a Carl question, but they keep wiping out previous gains. It says here,
right,
last September, the BLS estimated its preliminary adjustment. The benchmark position for the year prior to 2025 would show 911,000 fewer jobs than previously reported, or about half the total. How do you be half the total? The Bureau report the final number Wednesday was expectations that the final count will be less than that, but still significant. Goldman, for instance, estimated the number to be between 750 to 900,000, while Fed Chair Jerome Powell said a few weeks ago it will be closer to 600. So all the numbers that we've read, and I guess people have traded on now for the last 12 months, are essentially going to get wiped away. I can't even conceive of that.
Well, one of the things that I've made a large amount of noise about over the years, not just with the BLS, but with any statistic, is that
we have to start dropping the L out of BLS.
Well, it's the Bureau of Lies and Scams. Yeah. Okay, I mean, that's what I've called them for 25 years now. So, I mean, it's not like it's a new thing. Any statistical sample has an error band. Okay, I mean, it's just the way it is. Errors are normally distributed. If you are truly making mistakes, then there is a normal distribution to those mistakes. If all of the errors, or statistically nearly all of them, go one way, they're not errors. Okay? That's deliberate. And
they're not random. Statistically speaking, they're not random.
Right. And if that's the case, then it has told you that one of two things is true. One of the things that may be true is that the so-called errors are in fact not errors, they're deliberate manipulation. That's one possibility. And the second is that your sample is intentionally effed up and you are too lazy, whether for political reasons or just because you're lazy, to fix it.
Well, hold that thought, but I just want to get everybody on page, with whether we're exactly talking about the right thing. Now, critique me on whether... Every month, if they come out and say 100,000 new jobs are predicted, that goes in your chart that Carl's keeping and everybody else. Now, you have one that's probably unadjusted, but that would go in your chart. Now, the next month, they say last month's revision was down 50. But still, if you look at the chart, it's going to say 100. And then once a year, they gather up all the revisions and make the adjustment, correct?
Well,
I'll read this paragraph. Tell me where this guy's wrong. Every month of 2025 reported so far has been down with revisions, taking initially reported estimates down by 624,000 and leaving the average monthly gains at less than 40,000. Every one of them have essentially been somewhere in the 80 to 100 up until the last couple of months.
But that's always been true.
Okay, so the revision essentially takes, this number today takes all the revisions and essentially puts it back in the number.
Sort of. It's, okay. It's not just an arithmetic addition, but yes.
Well, yes. Okay, now, you're the guy that knows this, and Kevin, have you ever worked at a place that got a call from the Bureau of Labor asking how many people you have fired this month versus last month?
Well, I got one when I was running MCS.
Okay. Would you think like the banks did, Kevin? I bet they did. I don't know.
One time, by the way.
Okay, just once.
Yeah.
All right, so if somebody decides there's a list of people to call, now imagine the bigger you are, the more often you get called. I'm guessing, but I don't know that. Now, if somebody's going to call you, there's going to be a number. You're going to say, I had, 100 guys last month. This month, I got 102. Okay, that's two. And then as we go through the thing, if they're constantly twice as many positive, where's the lie? Is it in the people they call? Is it in the guy saying, I hired two and I really only hired one? I mean, where is it, you think?
No, there's two things. The most important one is that the BLS has this knob they call the birth-death number. And okay. It is essentially their guess as to how many businesses, establishments, because this is the establishment survey, not in the household survey, how many establishments were created and destroyed during the last month.
Did you write this article? BLS is also adjusting the model it uses to estimate jobs created by businesses opening and closing during the month.
Right, that's the birth-death number, and it has been crap. It's the reason I don't use the headline number at all. It's been worthless for 25 years.
Well, how do you, if we were going to do it rigorously and something Kevin could teach in class, I've always had the idea that when markets, the economy is good to booming, the numbers always lag because people are starting up and you're not going to find out about them until January. If they're 1099, if the market's going to crap ball and people are getting laid off, way more people are getting laid off than you think are getting laid off.
But the establishment survey does not measure. That's the household survey. There's two surveys in here.
Okay, but I'm thinking.
I understand that, Chief. But I'm saying, careful here, because what is claimed to be measured in each of these is two different things.
Okay.
Okay. And the thing that everyone's screaming about, and that has this, all this stuff that's in there, is, whether it's CNBC or it's, Zero or whoever, is the establishment survey. Okay? Because that's where this adjustment comes from. The adjustment that we're talking about, that I've been talking about, the one that I think is probably we'll find out when it comes out, but my expectation, the one that's going to matter, that's really going to make a difference to people, isn't that one at all. The one that's going to make the difference is the non-institutional civilian population number, which gets rebased every January, okay? And which was the uncorrelated data set that allowed me a year ago to without question note that, yes, indeed, Joe Biden did let 3 million people into this country that should not have been admitted, okay, that legally were ineligible to be here. He let them in anyway. He didn't give a crap. And everyone's, no, it wasn't really that many, da-da-da-da-da. Well, yes, it was, because it showed up right there. Now,
well, the way they counted the numbers at the border, it wasn't that many. I know how many actually got here or not. You and I have had that debate before.
No, 3 million people showed up in the data that were not at...
You could very well be right. I'm trying to agree with you. But the numbers that they had with the people got across the border, they counted the people who got caught, not the people who got through.
No, I understand that. And
so
that's
there could have been 0 to 8 million that got through, because they don't know. That's the point.
Well, that's what a gotaway is.
The asylum seekers.
No, that's the guy. Yeah, the gotaways, you know, obviously we don't know how many were gotaways, right? I mean, it
would
be zero. Because
the people who were actually counted were guys that came over, got caught, and sent back. So that number does nothing.
Not, well, okay, but not all sent back. These were, the 3 million were people that got paroled and they knew were here.
Okay.
Okay. There's zero of the people who did not get caught and therefore are not in the system. We're in that number, but we don't know how many of those people exist. We don't know how many of them are there.
Okay, but let's, before we get into that, can you and I and Kevin, oh God, can you imagine us building houses, picking out fixtures and arguing? We decide we're going to build some houses because the economy's good. We kick ass right. For 3 years. We, at one point, got 50 people working for us. We're paying them, they're either coming out of the union hall or doing something. We're paying them $10.99, or there are people on here, and I'm going to say we're going to do it properly and work visas or something. And we're kicking ass for 3 years, and all these guys are $10.99 dudes, and they all got Social Security numbers, and all of a sudden, third year housing market goes to crumpus, and we decide we're going to lay everybody off. I don't see anywhere that I've in my lifetime that any one of those people would ever have been called or surveyed anywhere.
Well,
unless they get the big long form census that you've
talked
about.
Well, that's where that data set comes from.
Okay? You think any of these people are getting the long form census?
You could say, well, none of them were right up until last year's revision came out, and then you're like, oh, well, yeah, actually, the sample does include them. So. And again, we're going to get a very good read today on the opposite, which is, Trump has been, quote unquote, encouraging many of these people to leave, either by directly removing them or bribing them with the Go Home app. Either way, the sample is the sample, and it therefore should show up, in the other direction, too. And if it doesn't, then it is reasonable to presume that the claims that have been made for the number of people he's kicked out are lies.
Well, the fear in some areas, and again, I don't know about a national debate, but in some areas here in the city, people who I know own landscaping companies and stuff, everybody was legal, and for 8 weeks, nobody would show up for work. I don't know where that's counted. But
well, I'll tell you what the problem I have with that, Chief. Is that I don't believe for a minute that every one of them was legal. In fact, I don't believe anyone.
Okay, whatever. But I'm saying there are a lot of people that were legal who were afraid to go because they're getting hauled over. Anyway.
But that's not the truth.
I'm not saying it's a national issue. I'm saying it was an issue here.
No, it's not an issue there. The real issue there is that they're running on stolen credentials, and they're afraid they're going to get caught.
All right. Well.
Okay, well, you know what? But the truth is that we have multiple examples, including police officers who were issued firearms, which makes them felons because an illegal alien who's here and has a firearm is a felon, okay, who we now know passed E-Verify.
Let's zero in on the labor stuff. What I'm saying is they were here in some instances, they were hauling in groups, and the guys who weren't guilty, they kicked out later, which is a little weird, but it made some people afraid, is all I'm saying.
People are being afraid. What we're going to find out is, very soon, is whether or not the claimed number of ejections via whatever means, in fact, has a basis because it's an uncorrelated data set. And this is, same thing with the disability numbers. Okay, everybody says, oh, no, those shots didn't do anything terrible to anybody. Oh, really? Well, guess what? You can't tamper with the BLS disability data. The CDC can tamper with a lot of other things, but that's not one they can get their fingers into.
I'm not so sure I would ever invite you to a party, a 1%er party, but... there I was.
Yeah, I'd be your best. I'd be the best fan there.
You know, I could have used you though, because one guy was talking to me regarding his family would go out and get the beagles and go fox hunting.
Yeah.
I can't say I had any idea what the hell the guy was talking about. I mean, I've seen it on TV, but...
You know.
Anyway, one of the ladies, her... yeah, I've known her husband since I started on the training floor. They had twin boys, and they both became Marines. One of them's pretty highly decorated. The other one has some issues with heart issues that they're absolutely... They're suing the government regarding all the COVID shots they make the guy made the guy take.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I don't know how you... I don't want to get off on this topic, but how do you determine the COVID stuff when Lou actually has a couple of cases against the government where they're making people take... Kevin, what do you say? 15 inoculations in one day or something? How would you decide which one hurt you?
Well, you know, there's a huge problem. So this is a military thing, right? To a large degree, is that, you know, going to the military and they hit you with a gun, right?
Yeah,
it's got 15 things in it, and plenty of people over the years have gotten badly screwed by those, and this is actually one of the best arguments for the fact that not just the COVID shots, but that these shots in general are dangerous, in that not necessarily one at a time, but that's not the way we give them, whether to kids or to soldiers. Okay, we give them to you know eight at once, right, and stuff like this. And my suspicion, and I've had this suspicion for a long time, and I can't prove it because nobody will actually run the study. They call it unethical to do it, but nobody will run the study. Is that it is not actually the antigen, the bad thing, a killed virus or whatever that they put in there. It's the adjuvants, most of which are aluminum compounds. And aluminum, like every other metallic substance on the periodic chart, is a metabolic poison. Now, the question is always, of course, the dose, right? Because everything in sufficient quantity is a poison.
Sort of like beer.
One beer is great. 20, not so much. But that's, so that's, and that's kind of the question is, but this is actually the experience of people like this. Lou's gone after it. Okay, that's fantastic. But the experience of the people that have gotten screwed like this tells you two things. One is that not everyone gets screwed, okay, because a huge percentage of the people, get that needle gun and nothing bad happens to them, right? They get
right away.
Well, but
But
for a lot of people, nothing bad happens. Not for everybody, of course, but for a lot of people. But then there's some people who get screwed immediately, right? And or over some period of time, and the fact that it happens is actually one of the best in adults, is one of the best arguments that in fact, happens to kids.
When I was very young, we got a puppy, right? And my job was to trot the puppy to the vet. And for the first four, I don't even do this anymore, but they used to have something called puppy shots.
Yeah.
And you brought the puppy in every week for 4 weeks and got a puppy shot. The vet didn't say, I'm giving them all four in one day.
No, well, that's, although now they tend to.
I'm saying probably they do. I mean,
They do, Chief, but you're right. They didn't used to.
Well, before I'm going to get back on kind of this labor number as to whether it's trade. Yeah. I've never found the labor number to be true. Kevin, you remember Lou's story about the Jerry Ford swine flu thing?
Oh, the swine,
I don't.
Well, that was the... For probably 30 years, that was the last flu shot I ever got.
Well, they stopped it after after 50 people died.
Well, not only that, I don't think... it was so long ago, I don't remember. Not only that, it gave you kind of a rude side effect in a real lot of people, like having to go to the bathroom like a lot. And so Lou was in...
Well, that's a side effect.
Yeah. So, but, if you're... home alone or you have enough bathrooms, it's not the end of the world. It might feel like it, but it's not. Well, Lou's in the Air Force Academy. So the commandant, some moron, well, he probably was brilliant, but, brilliant people make some of the dumbest decisions, decided, unbeknownst to this side effect, says we're all going to get it on one afternoon. and lose. What do you say, Kevin? Something about there's 4,000 students or 2,000 students, and there's 400 toilets or 300 toilets.
I was going to say, how many bathrooms?
Yeah,
are
he goes.
Yeah.
He goes. It was really bad.
Yeah, color of the terrazzo at the Air Force Academy went to brown.
Yeah, it was a. He goes. There was somebody behind every bush. It was pretty bad. Anywho, so these numbers come out. Let's say, for instance, there's a revision of 600,000. There's people of new hires of 50. Unemployment rate stays at 4.5 or 4, whatever the hell it is. Now what? Are we buyers or sellers? What are we doing?
Well, I think it tells you a few. I think you're going to get some, you know, this is, as I said, trend information is very fraught to attempt to discern from the January report. And I have, you know, all the way back to when I first started following this stuff, it was immediately obvious to me that anything that you try to take from the January number in terms of telling you what's actually going on in the economy is nearly impossible. And the reason is the revisions, okay, and the rebasing. What I'm very interested in is, you know, give me a couple months after this one, all right, February, March, and we'll see whether or not this, because supposedly there's a change in the birth death model in this.
But nobody said what the change is, of course.
Well, it's a black box number, you know, it's a knob. Right, it's a knob on the outside of the box that somebody twists. You know, who knows what the hell's inside the box? Right, it's kind of like the deflator.
Well, somebody does.
I understand that, but it's undisclosed. It's as equally disclosed, Chief, as the deflator,
which makes it useless in my mind. But that's okay.
Yeah, which we've bitched about a lot. Yeah. Right? But the thing is that it's the same sort of situation with regard to that. So I'm not expecting anything instantly actionable unless there's something in the inside tables, which of course, you know, I will look at very closely as soon as it comes out, that gives me some kind of an indication that okay, you know, the economy is, from a worker perspective, from a workforce perspective, is materially different than what I have been seeing for the last year and a half, and that is, it is deteriorating badly. Okay.
I think you're probably
right. That's a gift.
So just to be clear, if a guy was a guy like you that keeps track of all this crap, and the January number was 100,000, then in February the revision was minus 50, if I kept track of all the revisions, it's not going to equal the big revision number today. It might be close, but it's not going to equal it, correct?
I don't know that it'll even be close, but okay. It'll have a relationship to it, I'm sure, but I, you know, but how much I honestly don't know. But here's the thing that, you know, as I've been talking about for a while, the population adjusted employment number has been in the toilet for a hell of a long time.
Explain exactly what that is to everybody. I know you have, okay, but do it again.
Yeah, so this is, this number is the 12-month, so, you know, we take out the seasonal garbage, okay? It is the 12-month difference in employment when you add back in, before you add or subtract the employed, the change in the non-institutional working age population. Okay, so if the non-institutional working age population goes up by 3 million in a year, then over the space of 12 months, you have to add 3 million jobs to be even, because you added 3 million people who can work. All right, now we have all these people that are talking about the, you know, the demographic disaster, you know, women are not, you know, dropping kids, da 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 da, you know, whatever, okay? All right, this is, irrespective of the claims, and the births per woman is a fact, okay? The non-institutional working age population has been adding about 2 million a year for a very, very long time.
Right? Yeah.
Now, you know, up a little more some years, down a little, you know, a little less some. But, you know, whether that is from regularized immigration, whether it's from, you know, whatever it's from, there you are. Now, at some point, this we don't have kids thing ends up showing up in there, obviously.
I think it's showing them now. I think it's definitely showing
them. Well, but, Chief, there's a 16-year lag, okay, from the, you know, the time that you do or do not have a child, yeah, right? Obviously. Duh. So the thing is, though, is that this number has been there. But if you're going to look at the overall health of the employment situation in the economy, and this goes directly into the employment population ratio, okay, which by the way is the single number that tells you whether or not the government's taxation and spending situation is sustainable. It's the only one that tells you this. You know, there it is, right?
Well, so you're trying to make this simple for everybody, not that any of this is. If there's 100 million people that are working in, or that are eligible to work, and 60 million of them are working, you've got a 60% number. So if you add 2 million people, and out of the 2 million, only 1 million are working, that's only 50% of that group. So every time you do this year after year after year, it may not be the same people, but you're degrading at some point. You're degrading
that's
out
right.
of the gate,
number, the,
it becomes noticeable at some point.
Well, the fiscal situation and the employment situation is decreasing.
Right.
It is going down. Now, when this number is on a negative trend over extended periods of time, more than 12 months, it portends extremely bad things in the markets and the economy as a whole. That has only happened a couple of times in the 25 years that I've been following this. All right. It happened just before the tech crash, and it also happened just before the 2008 blow up. We are now in a situation today where from 2023 December, so we're 2+ years at this point, right?
Yeah.
That has been the case.
Well, and the people going to this, they don't necessarily go in the unemployment column. They go into the we don't know what they're doing column.
Well, but that doesn't matter.
I know, I know. Well, everybody, okay. I heard something yesterday. And it's a simple thing. And Kevin, if you can hack through and give me your opinion, I think a lot of some of the politics we argue and which side's better than the other, I think a lot of that stuff, certainly if you study a lot of history, economic history, not that I know history more than you guys, a lot of it has to do with essentially not only how people are doing, but how their attitude toward the next year. If I just do a little better, I'll have a good year. It's possible for me to do a little better, whatever. Anyway, one of the dudes on CNBC yesterday was giving a long story about the employment stuff, and he was saying that we look like we have a 3.7% increase in hourly wages last year, which I think is probably a tad high, but it's the number that comes out there. And he said that, well, inflation is 3%, therefore the average person is only gaining 0.7%. And I'm sitting there going, no, wait a minute. By the way, everything he said there is true, except I think one of the things we all agree on in this show, Hal's probably at the higher end, is the inflation over the last 10 to 20 years, maybe up back to 2000, has probably averaged 5 at least, say 5.5. Well, okay, so if you take 3.7 and if the number is 5, that means every year for 20 years, Joe everybody is retracting a percent a year. And I have a real strong feeling that is what is it? Is it the, you know, the fulcrum of half the political comments, half the bullshit, half the stuff we fight about really is that? Is it?
Well, yeah. Well, yeah. I wouldn't argue with that, Chief. And you know, I mean, gee, here we go. We actually agree on something.
They'll throw us off the air. We can't do that.
I know, you know. But
what if Kevin chimes in and says, I agree? Then we really got a problem.
Well, then we're really in trouble, right?
Yeah.
So you know, we've got, but you have
I agree
the,
if I could.
Well, there you go.
I'm just playing her today.
Kevin, how are you going to teach? How are you going to teach class by sign language?
I don't know.
No, well, that could be a problem, right?
I used a lot of video last night.
There you go. So here's one of the things, though, that I yeah, I put up an article about this yesterday, which is that we got the we got the supposed retail sales, the March number came out, okay, which is a retail sales report, and in a few days ago we got the consumer credit numbers for fourth quarter and in December. Now, December is of course usually a good month from a standpoint of retail sales because there's this holiday that happens every every December, right?
Yep.
All right. So, but the acceleration was actually rather light. Okay.
I thought it was almost zero. It was almost zero. I thought.
Well, yeah, and here's the thing: March does not have a deflator. It's gross dollars. It's not adjusted for changes in prices.
Which means it's really horrible.
Which means it's, yeah, which means in real terms it's negative. And at the same time, revolving consumer credit was up at nearly a 13% annualized rate.
And stock margin loans is going up at God knows what kind of rate, 20% maybe.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, that consumer credit ad normally does go up in December to buy presents. All right. That's not what they bought this year. This year they bought groceries.
Yeah.
That's not good. Okay.
Where is, just out of curiosity, I mean, I'm sure it's not a huge thing now, but I always got to ask the question. There's auto loans, there's credit cards, there's student loans, and then there's mortgage. Those are kind of the four ways they break it out, kind of.
Yeah, well, the top level breakdown is revolving, non-revolving.
Okay.
Okay. But here's the other question too that I haven't been able to get a clean answer to, is whether or not things like Klarna and Affirm are actually in that data.
Klarna and Affirm.
Buy now, pay later.
Okay.
On an organized basis.
How about your auto dealer that has a finance department for repairs?
Well, that's if it's, again, if it's revolving credit, then it's in that bucket.
Probably isn't. It's probably just a loan for your transmission.
Well, but who backed it? If it's, I'm willing to bet the dealer didn't back it with his own money. So it's, that's syndicated somewhere, right?
Yeah.
That's the reason that I question this thing with things like Klarna and things like that is that as far as I can tell, that's not. So if, is there a hidden time bomb in the consumer credit numbers that's not in the numbers? Okay, and yet it's real. Because this isn't being run through, Chase or whoever, right? Whereas, your credit card is. And so it shows up there. Your car loan is. It's syndicated. So as a result, I mean, even if it's Ford Motor Credit, it's still syndicated. All right.
I'll bet the transmission probably goes to Ford Credit. I don't know that.
Well, and if it does, then it's syndicated, so it's in the numbers. Okay, but I suspect that these things that have shown up in the apps, where you literally can charge, can charge your bar tab, on buy now pay later kind of thing. I have a suspicion.
Yeah, you see that with a polo shirt at L.L. Bean or something.
Yeah, it's on all the apps now, right? And all the all the websites for all these retailers. And I have a suspicion that whatever that level of indebtedness is, I don't think that's in the consumer credit numbers.
I'll bet it isn't.
And that's, I don't know how big it is. That's a problem.
Yeah.
Because that's telling us, that's a piece of information about consumer financial, your balance sheet as a consumer that is opaque to the market as a whole. I think that's a huge problem.
It's also booked revenue for the companies that they may not ever get.
Well,
they may or may not get paid.
No, well, no, Kevin, it's a little different because the way these things work is, and they're all basically the same. There's some differences on the in the margins, but in general, the merchant gets paid immediately on these, just like they do with daily settlement on a credit card charge.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, if you if you buy it with a credit card, yeah, it's
right. So the thing is, these work the same way. And of course, this leads to the question: how does a company like Klarna make money, right? And the answer is, first off, there's a discount charge, just like there is on a credit card. Okay, so there's that, and then on top of that, if you miss a payment, and these things typically are sold as zero interest, if you miss a payment, the fees and the back interest can become confiscatory really fast. So they look a lot like a payday lender from that perspective. I mean,
they're counting on looking that way.
Well, of course they are, but the imputed interest rate in many of these cases is like 35%.
All right, so go ahead, Kevin.
No, nothing for me. In fact, I'm going to have to drop off. I got to head over to the doctor's office.
All right, buddy. Good luck with that.
Hey, yep. Feel better, bud.
You wonder. I know it's a curse, and I think a talent of mine is I'd like to dig into this stuff. I have good credit. I think most of the listeners probably do. I get these things all the time regarding balance transfers. I don't have many credit cards. I got a couple, but I get them like every month. Transfer your balance, which I don't have, over, or you could use a check to go buy a car if you wanted. I mean, it's a and it's zero interest. The last one I got yesterday was they're usually out a year. The last one is to February 2027.
Right.
You got to go some 5% up front, which used to be 3. And oh, by the way, at the end of 12 months, you go back to your regular rate.
Right.
Now, something like that, if you play the game and you pay something for the 12 months, you go back to your regular rate on the balance. But if all of a sudden I stop making payments in the middle, do I owe them interest on the first 6 months, I guess is the question. Some places you do.
The way most of these work, Chief, is that if you don't pay it off in 12 months, the interest is retroactive to when you
The bank ones aren't like that, but at least the ones I get. But now Nancy claims that a lot of the people she works with on the mortgages, if you say, come buy a swimming pool and no interest for the first 2 years, she says if you all of a sudden miss a payment at the end of 1 year, you owe interest for the whole year that you thought was free. In other words, you start piling the, like you're saying, they back up the interest. I don't think the bank cards do that because you're paying up front.
I've not read it all the way through, but... be careful and read the fine print.
Okay.
All right. I'm just saying that this is, I know that, there have been times quite a while ago, you get pitched these things all the time, buy these appliances over. It's not so much true these days, I guess, but it used to be, buy these appliances and pay in 12 months, right? And of course, what they're hoping is you don't, because then there's a 28% interest rate that oh, by the way, is retroactive to the date of the purchase. And so when I was younger, I did that a couple of times, but boy, I made damn sure it was paid off. So,
well, if we were the Oval Office, for instance, and I'm not accusing anyone, but I will accuse this, and this isn't an accusation. Trump and gang already know the numbers.
Oh, of course. Well, they get
which you should, by the way. I'm not saying you shouldn't. Now, how wide the gang is, that's another whole story, and I suspect it's a little too wide, but. I've told this story a few times. I might as well try it one more time. Way back in the day, Carl, I was trying to look at stages of life by which car I had. Well, I had the Ford Bronco, so what year that would have been, I don't know. It had to be at least 30 years ago. When was Reagan in office? Somewhere in there. Well, Schultz was his Secretary of the Treasury, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm driving down on Sunday morning at 7 o'clock, take my mom to breakfast, and of course there's radio stuff on at that hour nobody listens to except me. And this guy's interviewing George Shultz, who just becomes Treasury Secretary. And the guy says, out of the blue, he goes, Secretary Shultz, when you put out a number, when the government puts out a number, who has access to that number before it goes out? And I thought, well, he's never going to answer this. But he did. He goes, well, you know, funny you should mention that. I asked the same question when I walked into the office, and I get this list of people.
Right.
And he goes, it should be, obviously, the president. You know what, the president, I footed out the helicopter one or whatever it is, and hey, what do you think of the numbers? And him go, what numbers? I mean, you can't do that.
Right.
He said, so there are people that, you know, should know before because they're going to be asked. And then they actually used to put, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, I think they used to have reporters in a room without phones, without anything, like 10 or 15 minutes before, that they would tell the numbers to so they could get their announcements and their interpretation correct. So when CNBC at 7:30 in 1 second, you know, Steve Leisman or whoever could actually talk about the numbers, and it wasn't like he just got them like you on the show here. I mean, so but the idea was you couldn't leave the room. So there was,
well, you were 100% correct.
Yeah. So thank you, Russell. And
you're welcome. I've been listening. You need a little affirmation.
Okay.
Well, yeah. No, that's that's.
But anyway, Shultz goes,
I'm just playing around. Keep going.
Well, then Shultz says to the guy, and I look at this list and I go, what are these guys doing on this list? This is what he says on the air. And the guy goes, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, I tried to kick him off. He goes, it's the hardest thing I've ever tried to do politically, and I gave up. Yeah, I could not believe he said that on the air.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, like was noted, and this was actually talked about on CNBC years ago when I actually used to listen to them, you know, during the time of the 08, you know, blow up and stuff like this, when they were getting, you know, like the Fed decision, they're all in a quarantine room. Okay. And same thing with the jobs numbers.
Yeah.
All right. They're all in a quarantine room. You know, there's no electronic equipment in the quarantine room, but you've got the report in your hand. So you've got the 10 minutes or 30 minutes or whatever to write the story that you're going to put on the air at the time that the numbers come out. Because otherwise, you end up like, you know, you end up like me. Okay. I mean, I get it like every other mope. And then after I get it like every other mope, you know, my article on it doesn't come out for half an hour. Why? Well, I got to write the article.
Yep. Well, remember, Russell, remember Chris Manns? He used to help us with the show. And he's in the futures end of the business.
Right.
And for those who watch Trading Places, like when the crop reports and stuff come out.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Washington. He wasn't in the room, but he was some guy, you know, a newsman was in the room, and it's a quarantine room.
Right.
And anybody who was there in the building or wherever is in the quarantine room. So the guy says to him, who the hell's that guy? He goes, well, he's the guy who fills up the Pepsi and the Coke and the machines.
Yeah.
And they go, what's he doing in the room? Well, he was here in the 10 minutes. If you're here, he can't leave. And so we stuck him in the quarantine room. And the guy's eating a sandwich, drinking a Coke in the quarantine room. And he's the vending machine guy.
Well, yeah, they used to be fairly serious about this stuff. I mean, you know, the thing is that today you have to, you do have to ask a lot of questions about that because there are ways. And it's not even very complicated. They're, you know, you can build rooms that are basically a Faraday cage, right?
Yeah.
And so you got a phone, but it ain't working no there in there.
Right? Well, Lab, this went out there to our trader friend Russell, and I'm going to say, Russell, if you give me a serious Fed speech at 3 in the morning in China, you give me a Fed thing or cut the discount rate or whatever, and I'm going to say I make money 80% of the time. You give me the labor report, I have no idea how to trade it. I mean, so I'll ask you the same question I asked Carl. Okay, the number is 50,000 today, 4.5% unemployment. You know, by the way, we readjust 600,000 people. Are you a buyer or a seller, or are you clueless like me?
I'm clueless probably for about a half hour or so. I need it. And if I were going to trade it, I'd need to be better prepped on that potential million And I heard the, it could be as much as a million as far as the revision, but my my attention around that one is pretty limited. So I'm so upset over government shutdown screwing up the way that I trade economic numbers, I could scream.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. Welcome to the party.
I know that's I know that's the biggest issue with all of this.
Not
right
to mention you got
Carl trading.
Not to mention you got Carl interrupting your hour at 7:30 too.
Well, and you know we had a there's a clause in my contract that I've never have to be on with him.
Oh, okay.
I'm joking.
Well, wait a minute. You just piled in with him of your own volition.
I know. I just piled in with him, and I was listening. You know, I was listening on the drive in this morning, and I was like, you know, Carl makes an awful lot of sense.
Well, you got to keep him focused, though. You know, you got to keep him focused.
Well, you know, it's kind of the way life is sometimes, right?
Yes, I'm focused. When you keep hitting economic numbers, wander me off somewhere, and you don't pay attention to anything I say, type of thing.
Tell him to behave because there's somebody else on here that he has to be nice to.
Uh-oh. Dr. Demiak, you with us?
I'm with you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning. Last week we had all the risk stuff going on with Bitcoin and everything. By the way, it's down again today. Can we wander off on that just a little bit? I was somebody had an article last night I was reading. I didn't send it to you guys, but it was one of the big bank dudes was talking about how he's nervous about the Bitcoin sneaking down like this, and I don't know. I get the feeling, by the way, I quote you all the time, Russell. I don't know if you want me to. That when all this stuff was at its peak, you thought the total—I'll use the term wealth in there—was about $3 trillion. Do you remember that?
Yeah. It. I would always try to temper people's fears with going, you know, the value of it's about the same as one of the largest companies in the S&P 500. I don't know if it ever got. I would rank Bitcoin periodically as if it were an S&P 500 stock, and I don't even know if it's reached the top 10 still. So, I mean, as far as magnitude relative to the overall financial system, I really don't worry that much about crypto. I really don't, and. I don't think that's going to be the thing that takes us down.
Well, I don't.
I'm taking all kinds of mental notes, and I typically talk to Dr. Demiak after we finish this program. That consumer credit thing with the buy now, pay later stuff, I definitely want to do some digging on that. I can only imagine how many people just go, well, that makes sense. You know?
I'm very interested because those firms are not part of the banking system officially. Mm-hmm. And so it's not going to be in the Fed's consumer credit report unless there is some back channel that adds it in.
That's what I want to dig on. And you know, any financial disaster we ever have is it seems to be stemmed from non-banking entities doing banking stuff.
Yeah, no, really?
You know,
I like to chime in, like with that Klarna and stuff. It's interesting. It feels like their model, and I say that because I've listened to some of them speak, is that the Klarna, when they give you that buy now, pay later, it seems like such an amazing deal. And you're getting like almost 0% rate because they split it up in equal payments. And it works really well for those who can make those payments and make it and be consistent with it because it's, again, very, very cheap credit. But their goal is they're using this almost as a loss leader to get you into their system so that you do start to use it more like a credit card. And again, so it's like the Costco chicken that you're buying, right? You come in for the chicken, and then you end up dropping $500 on other stuff that you didn't know you needed. And Klarna and these particular types of buy now, pay later systems are, I think, setting the stage for trying to get into that banking, but also really to fast forward consumer debt or consumer credit. So if we're looking at somebody with like an 8.5% or 8.5 credit card debt, that doesn't include the Klarnas of the world. So we're now creating other opportunities for people to get further and further into the hole. And this has me concerned.
Larissa, yeah. Do you think those guys, you said the interest rate looks pretty good. If you buy an $80 flannel shirt from L.L. Bean, do you think those guys get a spiff of like $2 from the shirt too?
Well, no, it's no. The way it works, Chief, because I mean the way their model works is, I mean, it's documented. Okay, there's the merchant is getting hit with the discount charge, but it's considerably larger than mainline merchants on a credit card transaction. Okay, so like if you have a card present transaction in a store, all right. Your discount rate is probably in the 1.5. It depends on the line of business mm-hmm. you're in, but around 100, yep. 1.5, with a a 15 or 30 cent ticket charge. Okay, this is one of the reasons that stores hate and for a long time were prohibited from keeping you from using your card for like dollar charges. Now they can do it because enough people finally sued and they finally said, yeah, okay, that actually is rooking the merchant. Okay, because you could have a seriously negative margin on that transaction if it's small enough. But Klarna takes like 3.5
from the merchant. From the merchant.
From the merchant. Right. So essentially, what ends up happening is that everyone who doesn't use this ends up paying for it.
So they're getting $3 on an $80 shirt, which is what I originally asked.
Well, yeah, but Klarna is getting the $3.
Yes, I'm saying, yeah.
But the problem is that's a $3 cost that the merchant has for everybody that uses it, and they've got to get that back somewhere.
Okay, when Dr. Demiak mentioned that the interest rate looks good, I just was pointing out that that's not their only source of revenue on the transaction.
Well, actually, it's not at all. It's, yeah. Their base revenue is off the discount charge.
Right. But their goal is to get people into the system so that they can start charging some more interest.
Well, their goal is to get you to not pay.
Yeah,
that's so old. You beat me to that one. I was in the car and I was like, I can't wait to jump on and talk about all the when I was growing up in Memphis watching wrestling behind my dad's back because he said I wasn't allowed to watch it. And it was nothing but furniture ads with zero down, blah, blah, blah. That's right. Actually probably my first finance lesson. Was when because I actually learned how that I dug into it because it didn't make sense to me even when I was in junior high. And when something doesn't make financial sense to you, or like they like to say with respect to social media, if you're not paying anything at all, then you're the product.
Yeah.
And I think what Larissa's trying to kind of say in here is that you're the product because you're the kind of consumer that maybe can be marketed to in other areas, and you can't tell me that those guys are not marketing you as an active buyer of stuff online to other people.
Russell, would you expand that to people who want zero brokerage?
Yesterday I was on a podcast with a firm that charges a flat fee, and you can do as much futures trading as you want.
Wow.
Oh boy.
For the month, yeah. So, pretty rep firm too. I don't want to. Because some of their competitors advertise on here. I don't want to say who it is.
Okay.
But I mean, you still have to pay the fees, but you don't have to pay the futures trade. So, yeah, zero. I mean, and yeah, to directly answer your question, G. When I worked for SIBO, and I would go to some of the more retail type of trade shows, and people would ask me that very question. How are they able to do zero commissions? I would explain the payment for order flow, and I said there's value in your order to them through other entities because they were, they'd get paid by Citadel to give them a first look at your trade, etc. So yeah, the very low commissions, the way that they're able to offer those is because they're able to make money with the with it on the other side. And with Klarna and those guys, they hope you miss a payment so they can charge you 2 years of interest or whatever on a shirt. To give her, Larissa's a big fan of my wife, and on our very first date, she asked me how much credit card debt I had.
love it.
I know, and yeah, you can just visualize that one. And I hope she's listening. I told her to listen today. And she said, and her thing was, I don't want to end up with somebody that's paying for a potato 3 years down the road.
Well, there you go. And
that was actually, always her example.
Well, that's actually that
50 cent
smart.
Potato shouldn't be $3.
Well, you know, way back in when I used to, God, I don't think any of you guys are old enough to even. In college, one summer, I sold Cutco knives because I sold three editions of them to my mother and somebody else. They used to still do hope chesting in those times. I don't even know what that even means.
Oh yeah.
And so to turn it around, not being a male chauvinist pig, when ladies would come to marriage, this is 100 years ago, they would actually have all the kitchen stuff. They called it like a hope chest, where they showed up like with stuff. And now the first thing probably you would ask a young, I don't know if I would, but you would ask somebody, by the way, how's your credit card? You want somebody coming to you at least with clear title, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, well, and I think like a lot of situations, that one related to the fellow that came before me.
Well, I would certainly ask if I was a young lady. Well, if I was a young lady and some guy pulls up in some $80,000 car and wants to impress me, I would at least say, by the way,
did you pay for that?
Did you pay for it?
Right.
Yeah.
How much are your car payments? That, you know, see, that's a little bit more subtle than how much credit card debt you got.
But I like the credit card debt.
It's a good question.
But it also does something a little bit deeper. It says, are we financially compatible?
Yeah.
So if I'm a saver and you're a spender, this is a great flag up front.
Well, it's beautiful if the bank gives the saver a percent and charges the other person is 30% and gets in the middle. That's great.
That's a good business. I want to be in that business.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's funny. You mentioned the credit card debt, Larissa. Nancy, I don't know if you ever listen when she's on. She does mortgage stuff. And some people are so close to the edge, and that's what Nancy's really good at, is getting people a mortgage where you kind of wonder how the hell she did. I mean, she's not doing anything untoward. But she'll tell me, never in anybody's name or anything like that, she'll say, you wouldn't believe it. I told this person, I got you qualified. Don't even charge toothpaste between now and the closing. And sure enough, somebody goes out and buys like a recliner chair or something and blows the whole thing. People have no idea. Some people can't even stop. They see it and they just have to do it. Because they're so close to the edge. She said, I told this person, don't even charge toothpaste. And what do you think they did? They went shopping. I mean, where do we get that mentality? Listen, you're closest to this. Where do we even get that?
I believe we are in a deep consumer nation, and we don't have very good systems to teach people about the fact that you don't need to satisfy every immediate need or want that you have. We're so focused on that immediate gratification that we can't think past the day.
How much?
And that's a greater society problem.
You know, this harkens back to an article I put up a couple of days ago. You do realize that there are an awful lot of cultures on this planet that don't have a future present tense, right? A future perfect tense in their language today.
Okay. I did not know that.
Well, guess what? We've imported a whole lot of them into the United States.
Well, I mean, if you were to... A lot of it has to do with, I don't know if you guys were listening earlier, I was talking about the inflation numbers. If you adjust them over the last 20 years or so, and you get to where we think they might be, and you look at the increase in wages, obviously the inflation's over the wages. I mean, right now they think it's a little below. I don't buy that. But I've been a lot of the people that we sometimes on a Thursday night we meet, Russell, and some of them know you in the name. They don't know you personally. They're from the CBUE or OCC. And these are kids, 30-ish, 32-ish, maybe 28-ish, all with a degree, couple with law degrees. They don't see their life as necessarily next year being better than this year. Where when I was younger, everybody always thought, hey, if you made 20 grand in 1978... you're going to make 24 at least in 1979. I mean, the thought never even crossed your mind that you have a backup year. It may have happened, especially if you were a trader or something. But your view of the future was everybody was moving forward. And if you were on board or if you worked hard or something, we're not talking about Andy and Mayberry here, but I don't see that view at all. These guys, they see themselves working at OCC 15 years from now. Never with a new car, never with a house.
Yeah.
Somehow or another, the whole psychology, and that's why I love having Larissa, because she teaches this all the time. The whole psychology, I just can't get my hands around, Larissa. I mean, on the one hand, people are buying stuff, yet it's different if you actually think that next year is going to be better. I mean, when my parents bought the house, my stepfather and my mom bought the house in 1958 or something, of course, my mother, go figure, Larissa, being a widow, had saved up enough for the down payment. My stepfather had a nice job, but of course, he had no dough. Well, she puts on a down payment. We're talking about a house was 18 grand, 18.5. Well, within my dad or stepfather had a good job, got some couple promotions, raised. Within 2 years, I'll bet the mortgage was half of one paycheck. You know, and I would today. Does anybody think that's going to happen on any kind of a scale? I mean, I don't see. I can't imagine that happening. I mean, did Russell talk?
I think that's one of the issues with the housing market right now is you don't have the next generation of buyers coming in because they can't, you know, it's damn hard to afford a house on single income, let alone two incomes these days.
Well, you
so can't. I think that generational, but I do think that that generational thing is going to end up having an impact on housing prices, but, you know, you're just going to end up with a generation of nothing but renters. And I've never felt like there's anything wrong with being a lifelong renter. You know, I've cited my younger sister, who is very different than I am. She's worked in her bakery her whole life. She barely finished high school, and she is a permanent renter. You know, she's a permanent renter because I bought a place and she pays me rent. But if I hadn't done that, she would never be able to buy a home. But now it's becoming, you know, more difficult for people that have having a college degree might not even get you on track to be able to afford a home. So I wonder what the long-term what that long-term shift is going to do.
Well, we already know what a lot of it's going to do, Russell, mm-hmm. because it's already shown up in the data. And the bottom line is that, you know, being a long-term renter sounds okay as a, you know, in certain circumstances, but the fact of the matter is that it has very severe impacts on family stability, mm-hmm. and the response that you get from people who you cannot override their veto on is screw you and not having kids.
Yeah, that's you're saying that in China even more than here because it's so bleak. But I'd say that happening here as well.
And it's very real, and my own daughter has said absolutely not, and the entire reason is to a large degree economic. She does not believe that any children that she was to bring into the world would have at least as good or a better life than she has had, and she's not wrong to have mm-hmm. that consideration. Okay, she's actually, she's asked me point blank whether or not I have any issues with her, you know, making that choice. Absolutely no. I don't have any issues with you making that choice. You know, first off, it's not my, you know, not my uterus.
And you ain't changing the diapers either.
Right, and it's not my diapers to change either. But already did that once. But the thing is that from a societal perspective, anyone that thinks that this kind of thing does not have very serious long-term implications, which, by the way, are already showing up in the data and in the economy, and are going to get much, much worse with regards to the tax and spending balance, and therefore the deficit balance at the federal level. You got rocks in your head.
Yeah. Well, just I'll lob this one out there, but then if we go to break early, then we'll talk about the labor stuff, and I want to kind of come back to this, but I'm going to say it on a long-term period, and I'll address this to Larissa, because that's what she's teaching. Well, she's teaching all about being young and stuff. Not being young, but being young and being economically viable and having some knowledge. I would say that if in my day, if you were to assume perfect competition. And whatever, I don't know if you guys do this anymore, you professors, but whenever they gave a
perfect competition.
Well, I'm saying it. Whenever they would give I'll use the term a test at University of Chicago, they would say, assume perfect competition, assume a cartel, assume monopoly, or something. Because your answer is totally different, right? Depending on what you are.
Right.
But I think if you were to assume perfect competition and give your class a 30-year period on renting versus ownership, the only correct answer is there's no advantage to either one. They both should end up...
They should be the same.
They should essentially be the same. And when I was younger, and I actually was... Robin and I were boyfriend-girlfriend for a while. The lady got killed in a car crash. We separated years ago, but always were friends. When I went to New York, I met... She's of Yiddish descent, and I met all these older Jewish people who lived in New York. They never owned a place. They never got screwed. Their rent went up 2% a year. They lived in the same apartment for 40 years, for God's sake. It was sort of like Hyde Park here or Lakeshore Drive. They never felt like they were getting screwed. It wasn't like the taxes went up 10%. It wasn't like the place went up faster than anybody's income. And all of a sudden, the last 15, 20 years, we think that's normal. If you don't own, you're screwed. That's not the way it ought to be, I don't think.
Yeah, but Chief, the problem is that if you have a one-year lease, your stability is defined by a period of 1 year.
I'm saying that's today's version when we stop putting money supply in.
Well, it's not today's. It's always been true. It just didn't work out that way.
Okay.
But when we have this idea in our, you know, because, I mean, I always had to, when I was younger and I was renting, I had to deal with this. You know, there's always a possibility that there's going to be some massive
increase. I'm talking
about
these people will be 100 now, so I'm talking.
Well, I understand that, okay? But, I mean, even back, you know, in the 1980s when I was a renter, okay, every time the lease came up for renewal, there was always a possibility that they were going to turn around and say, oh, by the way.
Right.
All right? And that's just a risk you have to deal with. But the other side of it is, where do we get this idea that we, the people, are the ones that allow this to go on? How do you let a government run a 7% federal deficit every single year and nobody tells them, you cut that crap out or there's going to be a gallows in the National Mall tomorrow morning?
Because what helps the... Well, we got to go to break. But what helps the government helps rich people.
Well,
right?
I understand this. I'm just saying.
Well, let's go to SP Futures up 11. As if he's up 35 and we come back, the numbers will be out. Carl will talk about them. Larissa and Russell will critique Carl, and I'll kind of listen in. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Listen, are you a 50-year-old person looking for term life insurance? Then you need to talk to Bob. Bob specializes in helping people find $1 million or more of term life insurance for a couple of $100 a month. Look, you need to know there's a price war in the term life insurance business, and you may be paying too much. Call Bob, and he'll shop and see how much money he can save you. Look, this could be the last term life insurance policy you ever have. Your rates are guaranteed for the next 20 years. That's right, guaranteed level rates for the next 20 years. And if you're a smoker or your health is not perfect, Bob has great rates for you too. So for $1 million of term life insurance coverage for a couple of $100 a month, call Bob right now. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. 800-989-1415. That's 800-989-1415. Paid for by Term Direct.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom O'Neill. Andrew on the board. SP Futures up 20. Nasdaq Futures up 77. But rather than run through everything, because everything's moving all over the place, we've got what's our number, Carl? I can't read it on the. Hey, Carl, up there, Andrew.
Sorry, excuse me. I'll have to tone down the traffic music.
Carl, repeat. We got to get the traffic music off.
Plus 130. The formal unemployment rate down one tick to 4.3.
Yep.
And if you give me about 30 seconds, I'll pick these numbers up off the... Because what I'm real interested in is this non-institutional adjustment.
I've got Household surveys up like almost 500,000 people, 550.
Okay, so this is interesting. The deportation claims are false.
Gee.
They're false.
Okay.
We went from last month 274816 to 274892. Or 982. So up almost 200,000, which is approximately the same as it has been running. A little bit more. So the idea that we've ejected 2 million people out of the country, it's a lie.
I don't understand how we all of a sudden got the people working ratio. I've got us up a million people, a million. Oh, no, what are we talking about? 700,000 people from
careful.
Last month.
You're on the wrong column again.
No, that's on the. This is people over the age of 16.
I'm just telling you, you're reading this. You're reading it in the wrong place again. You're using that seasonally adjusted number. You got to stop doing that.
All right. Well, this is the idiot the idiot sheet that everybody else is going to read. That's why we have you.
Okay.
We've got 400,000 more people in the workforce, of which 400,000 basically are employed, and a little less are 100,000 or less unemployed. And we don't know what they're doing. Column is down 200,000. That's what these guys say. What do you say?
Okay, what I say is that the employment population ratio on using the actual counts instead of the knob twisting clowns is down 3 ticks. That's very bad because each of those ticks is 600,000 employed people. Okay, so that's a really bad number. The unadjusted employment number is down 630,000.
What do you got that one? I got 164,520.
I got 163,090 from 163,720.
Well, 600,000 less. That's a hell of a lot.
It is, but again, remember, this is usually January is a firing month because you fire all the seasonal workers. Okay, so that's a negative number is not surprising, right? It happens every January, or at least it typically happens every January. Didn't happen last January, interestingly enough. Last January was plus a million, but pretty much every January it does because, you know, you fire people. That's what happens after Christmas. In 2024, it happened. It was negative 1.1 million. So, you know. The we don't know what the F they're doing number was down 143,000 unadjusted.
Right, that's almost the same. It's got a 220.
Yeah, so that one's negative. On a 12-month basis, the we don't know what we're doing number was plus a million 1.080.
All right, the real definition of we don't know what the hell they're doing number is people that are not working, eligible for work, not working, and not actively looking.
That that didn't tell us they were looking.
Right.
When we called them.
Or we didn't care to ask or whatever.
Well, no, they asked. This is from the household number, so they did ask. Okay. This is not the establishment number. This is, you know, from the household survey. So if they ask you, are you employed? No. Are you looking for a job? No. Okay. You're in the couch surfing.
Has anybody ever gotten one of these phone calls?
I never have. But
I never have.
And by the way, a lot of this data is also off the ACS. So, you know, that one does, right? I mean, that's that long form thing. But the 12-month adjusted number for a population change is -1.54554 over a 12-month period. That
just as a statistical number, and we'll get Russell and Larissa in. Just as a professorial statistical number, we keep, you and I, Carl, keep referring to this long-form census, which I don't know if anybody's ever gotten it. It's quite a thing, and they pretty much are up your butt to fill it out. Russell, Larissa, you guys ever got that thing?
No.
I got one.
I got one about 3 years ago.
When I lived in Florida.
It's what is it, 40 pages, Carl? 25?
It's a book.
Yeah, it's a book. And they send it to you, and then they say, by the way, if you lost it, we'll send you another one. Finally, they stay up your behind enough to where, you know, if you're any kind of a citizen, you fill the damn thing out. But for you and I keep referencing that they're getting this information from that. But if they only get me once in my lifetime. How do they know if anything changed? I mean,
it's a statistical sample, Chief. So it's okay. It's like any other statistic.
But it's never the same people.
Well, no.
It shouldn't be the same people, right? It's supposed to be a sample of the population.
Okay.
Right. So if you're thinking about, again, random numbers, right, it wouldn't be the same random numbers you would pick for every simulation. So it should, from a statistical standpoint, be different people. And theoretically, at most, you should only be surveyed once in your lifetime, if at all.
Right.
Yeah, I'm on it once. I did it once. Okay, so you guys, Lewis, you ever gotten one of those?
I have not gotten one.
Well, be ready someday. I'm sure.
I got one when I lived in Florida, and I was wildly pissed off about the idea of, you know, of the amount of information they wanted.
What's serious?
There's all kinds of threats in it too. You know, if you do, it's actually illegal for you to refuse and da 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 da.
Oh yeah,
know. Yeah.
Well, Lewis, they ask you about everybody who's in your place. What they're all making? Are they working? I mean, it's about as intense as you would ever think that you would fill out for the government.
Looks like a tax audit.
Yeah,
actually, it looks like worse than a tax audit. If you think about it.
But it's not the census, you know, like the Three Stooges. How many people are living here, and they go on to the next door?
Is that No. It's everybody's wages. What job? What kind of job do they got? I mean, it's holy crap! Did they get detailed about it?
Right. Well, I'm going to describe these numbers is murky, even with Carol making sense of them. Russell, Alyssa, what do you guys think?
I think it's been difficult to get really good numbers, and it's really difficult then to make any sense out of it.
I honestly don't think that we're going to have a decent idea as to what's been going on the last 6 months until maybe April or May.
Well, yeah, I would agree.
I think it's just going to take a long time because I always think of this number when they put it together as being a very rushed number. I think they have my impression is they've got fewer people trying to slap this thing together now, so the reliability is almost out the window until we get back on a regular Monday or I'm sorry, first Friday of the month pattern. I was kind of half joking earlier when I said that this is really screwed me on some of the trading stuff that I do. It really has, because I track the history of how the markets react to all of these different numbers and kind of have a systematic approach that I just have to throw out the window now. And I've been seeing how it would work, and it wouldn't work worth a damn.
Are we planning on getting another one in 3 weeks, on March 6th, or is that one delayed too?
I would assume so.
It'll be 3 weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. The internals, so, you know, looking at some of the stuff that I usually look like, you know, average hours and hourly and weekly earnings and things like this, I don't see anything in here that smells like dead fish. Okay. This looks kind of like fairly normal. I wouldn't call it robust, but I would say that, you know, I don't see anything here that makes my eyebrows go up. You know,
well, who's getting higher? Is it medical again? Or Kevin was wondering if it would follow what's the economic thing that comes out where you talk about the service index?
Healthcare, Chief. This is crazy stuff. Okay, the headline number. Now, we got this from ADP too, okay? Which, and by the way, this is the first time I've actually seen them correlate in a way that was reasonably defensible, which is kind of interesting. So ADP said 110 for private employment, and 80 of that was in healthcare. Now think about how nutty that is,
yeah.
Right? These guys say 130 total and 82 in healthcare.
What's the manufacturing area that Kevin was saying is perking up a little bit? Is it?
Well, let's see. I'm looking here. Construction. It's not real. Construction says plus 33,000 in non-residential specialty trade contractors. So I would assume that's data centers.
What about like some of the infrastructure stuff, highways and whatever? Those guys, there's a lot of that going on.
Those aren't specialty trade contractors. So yeah, so I mean, this is the establishment survey says that's the only place that there was a gain. And of course, that's probably not, you know, that construction, most of that's probably not 1099, right? But yeah, little change in other major industries, including mining, quarrying, oil and gas extraction, manufacturing, wholesale trade, retail trade, transportation, warehousing, information, professional, business, leisure.
How about professors? We get those guys all over the show.
Well, I guess if you got a job, it's good because you haven't lost it, right?
Yeah, well, it's, so what's the sum here? It's kind of where we thought it was going to be, although a little more.
The scream fest out of people who said that the revisions were going to be ridiculous, that didn't materialize. That was BS.
Well, it sounds like our Fed chairman was right on board at 600, right?
Well, that was a load of crap.
It's 500.
But I will tell you that the shocker for me, okay. Well, not really a shocker, but we're throwing all the illegal immigrants out of the country thing. The data set here says no, you're not.
Well, that's if we could count them one way or the other.
We counted them coming in, Chief. So they were the ones that got paroled by Biden in the last year of his presidency. Absolutely, were in the data set, and the ones that got ejected are not. So. If you count in one, you got to expect that the count's going to show up in the other. It's not there. The revision is essentially unch. And that, by the way, is unusual. Usually there is a fairly decent revision, but this time...
So the revision that's in the adjusted numbers is not in the unadjusted, is what you're telling me.
The population, the non-institutional working age population doesn't have an adjusted column.
Okay.
Okay, there is only one of those. And that doesn't have a seasonal adjustment.
Right.
That's the way that works throughout the year, is that they guess at what the rate of change is going to be for the 12 months, and it's every month. Okay.
Right.
So if you look at that column, if you look at that table A1, you will see that the not seasonally adjusted number and the seasonally adjusted number for the civilian non-institutional population is the same.
Larissa, long before your time, there was a guy here, Mayor Richard J. Daley, that was accused one day, and the guy says, "What about all these allegations?" And his response was, "Show me these alligators."
Oh, no.
And so I'm going to ask you, who the hell are these adjusters, and what do they do? I mean, where do they come from?
Oh, that's funny.
They're PhDs that can't teach. Go ahead.
Ah, that's great.
Oh, here we go.
They are probably, well, I don't know that they have PhDs, but I think they could be. They could have PhDs. But you know, Russell, not all PhDs are created equal.
No, okay. They're not.
There could be that. But they're economists who have a systematic model. And they take their model, they take the data in, and they run the data through, and then they make estimates on this. So these adjusters are not necessarily individuals who are doing creative research or things like that, but they're actually taking a well-established model that has been previously used. They may or may not tweak it to reflect current or changes in the economy and changes in our system, changes in demographics, but they're going to be using something that's been formulaic or done in the past, because that's what economists do.
Well, I was in class with a Nobel Prize winner, George Stigler, who had a great sense of humor. Somebody asked him some question had nothing to do with economics one day, and he goes something like, "Why would you ask an economist something like that?" He goes, "We're really good at what we do." He said, "But look at everything else we do." He goes, "Look at the sport coat. How many people have patches on their elbows? Look at the cars we drive. Who else buys those darn things?" He goes, "Any other decision but economics we're horrible at."
I don't know. I like the patches on the jackets.
Well, yeah. Plus, if you work your way through one, you can always put a new patch on. You won't need a new sport coat, right?
Exactly.
Oh, God. So what, if you guys were going to go give a, if Russell, if you were giving a speech today, or Larissa giving a class, you could both be giving a class, it was students want a 5-minute summary of this, and you just listen to the guy who digs deeper than anybody, Mr. Carl. What's your summary? Buy or sell?
Ignore.
There you go.
Yeah, I think
that... I kind of said that's what I'm doing. So, ignore.
Well, we could have bought the futures. They're now up 35. We'd be up a little.
Well, that would be my read on it is yeah, nothing. All of streaming was a load of crap.
Yeah, basically all you have to do is buy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you always got to buy the dip. Hey, you know, I'm gonna slip back to what we were talking about before the break, and I thought we'd come back to it regarding the Bitcoin. By the way, I'm not at all going to disagree with Russell in the sense that even though $3 trillion used to be like a lot of money. Matter of fact, I got to get one of our producers, and every time one of our in-pro says, like, if I have $1 million, we got to use AI to change that to $1 billion, because $1 million don't seem like squat now, does it?
It doesn't seem like much. And by the way, I'm going to take a left on you. I looked up the amount of buy now, pay later debt, and it's about $110 billion.
Wow.
Revolving credit in the U.S. is about $4 to $5 trillion. It's a drop right now.
Okay, but here's what you are absolutely correct in terms of, you know, if Bitcoin went to zero, it, you know, would it be any different than one stock that's, you know, traded is worth $2 trillion? Well, not many, or two trillion, but went to zero. I can't disagree with that at all, except somehow or another, every time this happens, and I've gone through many of these in my lifetime, there's always an issue with not just the margin number, but who has it, where it comes from. And the thing that makes me nervous about the Bitcoin, and I'm asking if anybody knows more, I can't figure out who the hell's got the margin on it. I mean, if the market were to drop, I can go to FINRA, we all can go to FINRA, and say, what's the margin debt, and they're going to give us the margin debt, which, by the way, has been climbing precipitously in the last year, and margin debt on stocks, which makes me nervous, but that's another topic. I have no idea, and maybe you can tell me and, you know, absolve me here, but who the hell was Coinbase go to get a loan for Bitcoin? They're not going to a regular bank. You can't hypothecate Bitcoin to somebody, can you? I mean, I'm always looking for the thing that got me on this, guys, and I'm sorry to bore you, but when the thing in 2008 happened, all of a sudden, you know, John and I went and did some lecturing in German banks. There was a couple of German banks that we never even heard mentioned over there. They're up to their eyeballs in margin debt here. There's always somebody somewhere that when something collapses out of the blue has a big problem that causes problem for other people. And I just wonder, since I don't understand how the lending is in Bitcoin, I don't really know who has it, maybe it makes me more nervous than the numbers should lead me to believe. So am I being goofier?
Well, I think one of the big issues with all this crypto stuff is that it smells to me like there is a great deal of leverage behind and on this that's undisclosed.
That's what I mean.
That's precisely the same thing that is, you know, that if you look at what has always gotten people in trouble, has always blown up, it's been there, right? It's been some area of leverage that isn't being tracked, isn't being talked about, isn't being disclosed, and all of a sudden there it is.
Russell? Russell, are you here?
I was exploring, trying to find a number on how much Bitcoin is, you know, borrowed against or pledged or held on leverage. So I was doing a little dig in there.
Hey, good luck with that. I haven't found anything.
Good luck.
Well, I have better data services than you do because I work at a great university. I mean, seriously, that's one of the great things.
Without a doubt,
at a school like that. Yeah. So I was still trying to dig on that, but you know, if all the shares of Apple were, you know, held on margin, and Apple sells off 50% or so, it would have a pretty dramatic, and I'm thinking of Apple, the market cap, as being about the same as the amount of crypto outstanding. So it would catch up. But, you know, a lot of Bitcoin is kind of held offline in cold storage, and that can't be borrowed against. And I wonder what the actual float is versus that's available for trading versus what's being held by large institutions.
According to AI, 19 million Bitcoins, they claim 3 to 4 million are permanently lost.
Yeah, that's so permanently. I mean, like, you know, the guy who had a hard drive that's in a landfill somewhere that's got billions in it, and he's trying to get at it. Yeah, that's
there's a lot of part of the problem is in the regulated futures market and regulated stock market, there are leverage limits that are imposed by both brokers and at a systemic level, right? Not so much in these other things.
Well, yeah, not so much. You never really know.
That's the problem, Chief, is I don't know. You know, I mean, you can look at the margin debt and you can kind of back into that, in the regulated stuff, and you can kind of back into that, okay, exactly how big of a problem is that compared to the market cap of, what's out there, right?
Yeah, the CFTC claims, claims that they're the ones that are in charge of the Bitcoin because they claimed a commodity. Well, if that's true, then they need, it's their job to figure this one out.
Yeah, but there is no...
I mean, they won't, but it's their job to figure... Well, they if they say we're the ones that are going to be the regulatory body, and they jumped up and got ahead of the other regulatory bodies to be the Bitcoin regulator because, it makes an awful lot of sense that something that was created to, pay attention to the price of wheat is now worried about crypto. But they, they claimed it, and if they claimed it, then they should do a better job of giving us transparency as to what's really going on in that market. And and I don't think they're the agency that is the most vigilant of the regulators. So I think that's one of the reasons we're not getting that answer.
Well, I mean, just in terms of people saying stuff, and in this day and age, people seem to want to say stuff that obviously has never been in one of your classes. But I hear even Kenny Pulcheri, and Kenny's the best. He goes one day, well, they're gonna regulate Bitcoin. And it's funny because I'll ask Larissa this because she's got her finger on the pulse of this kind of stuff. We had our annual audit from FINRA last year. And we passed fine. When I say fine, they're basically up our behind for a year. There had to be 200 phone calls at my brother. How many emails back and forth, send us this. They sent some people here. When Larissa, I'll ask you, because you're a mom and you know this stuff. How the hell do you regulate somebody when you can't call them and you can't find them? Give me a break. How the hell do you regulate them?
It's very difficult. it's one of those challenges of how are we going to cooperatively do this? And if one party is not, then it becomes much more challenging. And the techniques I use in my personal home, I don't know that would work with FINRA.
Well, I mean, but the Bitcoiners, though, there's nobody. It's like trying to manage one of your children, but the kid's in China. I mean, how do you do it?
It's very difficult. You have lots of patience, and you still, at the same time, you have to check in with them. You need to be able to have some authority. I think that's something that's also very challenging, is if you're in a long distance relationship like this, you can pull it off, but the child has to still have some sense of authority from you. And if you can, it's really amazing, even in those phone calls, how a child will respond positively to correction. But again, it's the diligence of the regulator, or in my case, the mom, to be able to actually do this, and having that deep established connection with the child.
Yeah, but you at least
so
have a child.
We're looking at a regulatory institution that doesn't know the company, it becomes nearly impossible.
Yeah, because there was, when you talk about margin, and Russell has done this a lot of times, he's expanded that term. There's a margin that's right on. Actually, Russell, without even knowing you're doing it, you've expanded everybody's view. Is if all of a sudden somebody has, you know, 1,000 shares of Apple and it keeps going up, up, up. They may buy stuff that they wouldn't normally have bought because they have this wealth thing. Now, it's not, they didn't get the loan from PTI or Merrill Lynch and call up and say, send us 50 grand against our Apple. But maybe they are putting an addition on in their house, even maybe using a credit card that they're paying off maybe every month, with the knowledge that they have this wealth behind them. Matter of fact, Nancy, our mortgage lady, has said she's actually gotten second mortgages for people. I've heard of, she doesn't do second mortgage, but people she gave mortgages to, they got second mortgages on their home to buy Bitcoin. Not a lot, but a couple. Now, that's not in anybody, even if Russell digs through the best database there is, somebody's idea that my the wealth in Bitcoin for people, be it a drug gangbang or whatever the hell it is, if I have this wealth here of $3 trillion and all of a sudden it's $1 trillion, it's back down to two. What's the term? What do you even use for that? Is that implied margin? What is that?
It might be implied margin.
Because I mean, I'm going to make. I mean, I'm pretty conservative money wise, but if I had, you know, for instance, if I owned, you know, silver at $28, like a lot of my clients did for forever, and now it's 76, I'm going to feel a little wealthier, aren't I?
Yes, you will.
Now the question is, do I go out and plunk down, you know, money or no money and sign up? Russell, was it you last week that said you knew somebody that signed up 7 years on a car, $780 a month? Was that you? You still, Russell?
That sounds.
I typically do that, but I typically do that and pay off early.
Okay, but I mean, it's
that way. If something happens, all of a sudden, my you know, like, let's say I buy a new car and 2 months later, you know, IU decides they don't want me anymore. You know, then all of a sudden, my average monthly expenses aren't all that great. It's kind of a safety thing in the back of my mind, but I fully intend on I usually pay them off within a couple of years.
Well, I guess the question I'm leading to, which really no answer, except I think you guys have a better feel than me. How much of the, we've talked a lot this show and before, on how much this personal debt has gone up there. I guess my question is, with no answer, but just a feel, how much of people's willingness, now, you know, the people at the, I won't say the lower end, but the guy going out to find furniture, how much of the debt is because somebody has a 401k that's gone up huge the last 5 years or has a couple of stocks that have gone, how much of the debt is because people own stocks and things and they have all this wealth? And what if, God help us if it happens, the market drops 40%? Are we going to feel more levered than we are? I think the answer is yes, but what do you guys think?
Yeah.
Well, I think it really depends on what side of the K you are, right?
Yeah, so
you are
levered.
Oh, that's gonna hurt the top part of the K. But if you're on the bottom part of the K, and you can't afford eggs, the stock market dropping 40% probably will only impact you if you're in a situation where you lose your job.
Last question, we have actually a couple minutes. We started late. And in Chicago, everybody, this is the phenomenon. This is in every restaurant, really. But on the north side, where people allegedly have more money, right? New restaurant opens up in my two blocks of my house, and it's packed. They will not take cash. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, on the south side...
That's becoming more and more common.
South side... Uh-huh. It's going exactly the opposite. They've had to raise prices to people that have gone there forever. They know that people can't necessarily afford it. So now they're giving you a 3% discount for cash. What does that say about the demographic?
Well,
between the south side and the north side of Chicago?
I'm saying one
place. There's a difference?
I think that the people on the south side maybe are scratching for nickels more than on the north side.
Well, the 3%, I mean, there's, you know, it's interesting that I've seen an awful lot of that show up in the last couple of years, and I attribute that to a large degree to the inflationary impulse that's been in the economy in an attempt of merchants, particularly in the food service and, you know, drinking establishment area, to try to offer a little balm for the wound, if you will. in that you get a bill that has two numbers on it. The first one's a cash price, and the second one's a credit price.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing that a lot now, okay, including in places where I didn't used to see it. Now all of a sudden it's showing up, and it's I think some of that is kind of a soft pushback to what these people are running into, where people are saying, you know, F that, I can't afford to go out and eat or drink anymore.
What are you thinking, Larissa?
I think people are still going out to eat and drink. There was a great article that I read recently from the Wall Street Journal that says, my kid's sushi habit is causing me to go into debt. And as a mom with a kid with a sushi habit, I wouldn't say I'm in debt for it, but it's definitely chinking away. And there have been definitely moments where I know I should have said to my kid, we shouldn't go out for sushi because it's going to cost at least $150. But it's really hard to cut those types of habits because they've been so ingrained in my kid's 9 years worth of life.
There's a good sushi place by me if you're ever here.
See, it's one of those things where you're like, do I really want to cut sushi?
Do they have any
she's probably been there. She kind of lived near where she used to live near where you live.
You ever go to the Sai Cafe?
I haven't. We're a fan of the sushi house.
Okay. Is there such a thing as sushi in Tennessee or Indiana?
Well, there is actually down here, but the my daughter and I were down in the Fort Walton area last week. And there's a place down there that we had gone, for a long period of time that was really excellent. And we went in there and, yeah, okay, bring money. I mean, it's just the way it is. So, yeah, and the Irish bar / steakhouse, boy, that bill was a lot larger than it used to be, too. So, I mean, the squeeze is definitely there.
And those guys are... I think they're sort of getting squeezed. Can you make sushi out of sewer bass?
Oh God!
I don't think so, huh? Larissa, you know what sewer bass is?
I have no idea.
It's carp, right?
Yep.
Oh nope.
See, anyway, I do notice that a lot of places are. I mean, one of the things, and actually, one owner of a restaurant told me this one night, is you can't necessarily walk by a place. Because obviously, if there's people here versus no people, it's really obvious. But you really can't tell, unless you're the owner, how well you're doing. Because people may never have an after-dinner drink. They may only get one bottle of wine instead of two. They may buy a bottle of wine that's $30 instead of $60. You really can't tell by looking at the amount of people in a room how much people are cutting back. Which is, I think he's probably right. But... I mean, you do see. I mean, Super Bowl, everybody did pretty well. I think everybody left at halftime, though, didn't they?
Well, I mean, I think there was kind of an interesting, thing that was in the numbers, which is that of the a very large percentage of the people watching the game apparently were not watching the halftime show in on television in the United States. Now, the statistical numbers for everybody worldwide. Were quite good, but if you're an advertiser, the reason you spend all that money is the eyeballs, right?
Yeah.
if you don't get eyeballs, so the real question is whether or not the NFL really shot itself in the head by doing what they did with their choice for that midtime entertainment.
Well, there's people that love to watch the halftime show. There's people that's when they scheduled Chow.
Yeah.
I mean, you never. I tell you what, I was watching some of the golf thing, and we're going to go here pretty soon, but this thing started at noon.
I mean, I know.
I mean, you're talking about it was over at, what, 8 maybe? So we're talking about, 8 or 9 hours wrapped around 12 minutes of action in a football game. I mean, if you weren't tired of watching this crap by third quarter, I mean...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and plus the game didn't help. But good Lord, how many commercials are you going to watch?
Well, somehow every year they manage to get people to fork up that kind of money. So.
Well, I mean, I did, and it must be sort of worth it. Larissa, do you teach any value of advertising kind of in your stuff?
No,
we're totally outside of marketing.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I say that, we'll grab a minute here because we started late, but when I was doing the marketing committee stuff with the CBOE, you kind of learn after a period of time the difference between marketing and PR. And every time one of these ads comes on, because, you know, I did that for a while, even though I don't do it now, I'm always kind of curious as to whether, when I say the difference, marketing, you're looking to sell something, okay, like immediately. So if Pepsi comes on or Budweiser comes on, they expect a bulge in Budweiser sales like that Monday, Tuesday. And Pepsi used to publish this when they used to do a lot of Super Bowl stuff. They'd have a bulge for this first week and fall off. And if the bulge over the 3 weeks exceeded the amount they did for the Super Bowl, they were very happy. But if you're, let's say, Big Daddy, remember those guys had all the commercials where they didn't let you go online and you find the ones that were too racy for TV and they'd always have to lady with
you
less
mean go, you mean GoDaddy.
GoDaddy. Big, yeah. What's the difference? Yeah, Big GoDaddy. But now, nobody's going to see that commercial and open up a website. What that is putting something in your head for if it ever happens,
right.
and you Google website hostings and you see GoDaddy and you go, oh, those are the guys with the great commercials. You would go to them. It's the second touch. And there's a total different way to evaluate the two of them. And I'm kind of, which by the way, there's no, I mean, if you went to one of your marketing classes, there's no hard and fast way to do it. It's all kind of sense. The marketing part, you can evaluate. The PR part, it's like the United Center. How many people fly over the United Center and next time or 2 years from now or 5 years from now say, well, I could either go American or United, but guess what? I saw the United sign on the United Center. I'm going to pick United. Now, how did anybody even know that?
It's a much longer discussion than the negative 8 minutes that we have right now.
Yeah.
But my dissertation is on visibility versus reputation.
Really?
And it's a manual. Yeah, it's a matter of maintaining visibility is really what it comes down to.
Well, thank you for that.
That's why when you're watching, you know, the what was I watching recently that had, you know, it's just like when you're watching a sporting event, you see Coca-Cola in the background. It's just keeping it in front of you. That's all.
Well, I would say
it's just the same sort of thing.
My comment on the halftime show was I was stunned by the size of the extravaganza, the amount of people involved, whether you liked the music or didn't. I mean, the fact is, it was one hell of a thing to put on in a halftime of a football game, wasn't it?
I know. I want an outfit so I can hide like I'm in a bush all the time.
You don't want an outfit like those girls are wearing.
No, I want to be one of the, you know, I was tree number three in the junior high play, and now I've got a place that I could have performed on a big stage.
You know, I never dreamed that those were people in there. It shows you how clueless I am. I just,
you didn't see the videos of them running out there and running off?
No, I just watched them when they were there already.
Yeah, apparently some people are upset. They're saying that's how people are going to start sneaking in the country now.
Did those people get paid?
I have not. I know that people that did the Olympic opening thing in 96 when I lived in Atlanta did not get paid.
I think the people at the old halftime shows, when they just were outside on a big screen, their job was to run in and cheer. People went out. I think they got to watch the game at a big screen outside or something. They got paid.
Yeah, they don't even get into the game.
Anyway, thank you guys. Good show.
Thank you.
Russell, you take care of yourself. Afternoon. Next time you guys are in town, maybe we can even say hello once in a while. You know, it's possible.
Sounds good.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm not going to be back for at least a month.
S&P futures up 40. NASDAQ futures up 202. Carl, talk to you again on Friday, bud. We got CPI numbers on Friday. The government's screwing us all up, but we'll maintain. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.